March 13, 1962. Deep inside the Pentagon, a group of high-ranking military officials gathers behind closed doors. In front of them sits a document so classified it won't see the light of day for nearly four decades. A document that lays out a plan so disturbing, so unthinkable, that if it had been approved, it would have rewritten American history. Inside, the details are chilling. Plane hijackings, bombings, mass shootings, orchestrated chaos, designed not by an enemy, but by the very government sworn to protect its people. The plan was simple. Design crisis on American soil to manufacture an excuse for war. Blame it on a foreign power and use the public outrage to justify a war. The operation had a name, Operation Northwoods, and it wasn't a rogue idea. It was signed and approved by the highest levels of military leadership before it reached President Kennedy's desk. And here's the part that should make your stomach turn. It almost happened. Had Kennedy approved it, the United States would have orchestrated strategic deceptions to manufacture an excuse for war. The only reason it didn't happen? Kennedy shut it down. And a year later, history took its own violent turn. This isn't conspiracy. This isn't speculation. This is a declassified military plan that was buried for decades, uncovered only when secret government files were forced into the public eye. But that's just one case, one documented plan. And here's the question that should keep you awake at night. If the US government was planning something like this in 1962, how many times have they actually pulled it off? And how many times have they gotten away with it? Because the playbook is always the same. A crisis, a villain, a nation demanding action, and behind the curtain, somewhere in the shadows, people making sure everything goes exactly as planned. Today, we're looking at the history they want you to forget. The confirmed false flags. The ones still debated. And the ones that, if true, change everything. Because when history is written in blood, who's holding the pen? Throughout history, war has always needed one thing, a reason. Governments don't just wake up one morning and decide to invade, overthrow, or destroy. At least not most. No, wars need justification, a villain, a crisis, a call to action. But what happens when that justification doesn't exist? Simple, you create one. This isn't some rogue idea. It's a tactic as old as war itself. The Romans did it. The British did it. The Nazis perfected it. And the United States? Well, they've got their own history. And here's the problem. By the time the truth comes out, the war has already been fought. The newspapers have printed the headlines. The speeches have been made. The bodies have been buried. By then, it's just history. And history is written by the victors. But not today. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on some of the most controversial, deceptive, and yes, confirmed false flag operations in U.S. history. The ones we know for a fact were planned. The ones we suspect were executed. And the ones that, if true, change everything about the world we live in. From wars that never should have happened, to attacks that were never what they seemed, this is a story of control. A story of perception. A story of how entire nations can be manipulated without ever realizing it. And if history tells us anything, it's this. If they've done it before, they can do it again. Truth has never been the foundation of history. Control has. And the moment you understand that, everything changes. Governments don't just wake up one morning and decide to invade another country. Wars don't start because a leader slams their fist on the table and demands it. That's not how any of this works. Wars start with a reason, or more importantly, the illusion of one. And when that reason doesn't exist, you create it. March 1962. The Cold War is at its most volatile, and inside the Pentagon, war planners are facing an inconvenient reality. Americans don't want a war with Cuba. The idea of a U.S. invasion isn't popular. It won't sell. So if you're the Pentagon, how do you solve this problem? Simple. You make Cuba the villain. Inside a top-secret briefing room, U.S. military officials outline one of the most disturbing proposals ever conceived. A classified plan called Operation Northwoods. On paper, it's a national security strategy. In reality, it's an instruction manual for psychological warfare. The plan is methodical. It's not just one attack. It's a whole campaign. Fake terrorist bombings on American streets. Hijacked civilian planes shot down in staged attacks. U.S. military assets attacked by Cuban forces, except those forces would be actors. All staged, all fake. But by the time the news hit the airwaves, it wouldn't matter. The panic would be real. The headlines would scream, "Cuba attacks America." And the people, the same ones who didn't want war, would demand it. And here's the part that should make your stomach drop. This wasn't a theory. This wasn't a rogue idea from some lunatic general. This was written down, signed off, and presented to the U.S. government as a viable strategy. At the very top of that approval chain, General Lyman Lemnitzer, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They genuinely thought this was a reasonable strategy. This wasn't just war planning. This was the first real attempt to weaponize perception on a mass scale, and only one man stood in its way. The plan makes it to the president's desk. John F. Kennedy reads it. He doesn't just reject it, he's furious. It's not just that the idea is insane, which it was, it's that high-ranking U.S. officials thought they could sell him on it. Kennedy doesn't just shut it down, he fires General Lemnitzer. He reorganizes the Pentagon's war planning structure. But there's something unsettling about this moment, because this is the last major foreign policy decision Kennedy makes before his assassination. Coincidence? Maybe. But here's what isn't a coincidence. Operation Northwoods was rejected, but the idea behind it wasn't. The blueprint had been written. The psychological warfare strategy was now on paper. And just 2 years later, that playbook was put into action. The U.S. government had learned something powerful. A bomb doesn't start a war. A story does. Hey, if you're still here, it means you're not just here for the surface level stories. You're chasing something deeper, like we are. So please do me a favor, hit subscribe. Because if we don't build this community, the algorithm isn't going to help us and no one's going to tell these stories at all. All right. Onward. The most dangerous weapons in war aren't bombs or bullets. They're stories. Because when you control the narrative, you control everything. By 1964, the United States wanted war with Vietnam. For years, the conflict had been brewing. But there was one problem. The American public wasn't on board. Vietnam wasn't an immediate threat. The U.S. had no real reason to get involved. Sound familiar? That's because it's the same problem they faced with Cuba 2 years earlier. The solution? Same playbook. Different battlefield. The U.S. needed a villain. They needed an attack. And when one didn't happen naturally, they created the conditions for one. August 2nd, 1964, the U.S. Navy destroyer USS Maddox is patrolling the Gulf of Tonkin, just off the coast of North Vietnam. According to official reports, North Vietnamese torpedo boats launch an unprovoked attack, firing on the Maddox and forcing the U.S. to retaliate. 2 days later, it happens again, or so they say. This time, the Maddox and another destroyer, the USS Turner Joy, report a second ambush. Radar blips, shadowy figures in the water. The radio operator sends an urgent transmission. America is under attack. The news hits Washington like a bombshell. President Lyndon B. Johnson goes on national television that very night, telling the American people that the U.S. has been victimized by unprovoked aggression. Within days, Congress passes the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, granting Johnson full authority to launch an all-out war against North Vietnam. The Vietnam War has begun. The truth? There was just one problem. The second attack never happened. Years later, declassified NSA documents revealed the truth. There was no enemy ambush on August 4th, 1964. No torpedoes. No North Vietnamese boats. Nothing. The entire attack was a mirage, false radar readings, misinterpreted signals, and pure fabrication. And yet, it worked. It's almost like they didn't need an attack, just a belief in one. Within months, U.S. troop deployments skyrocketed. The Vietnam War escalated into a catastrophic conflict that would claim over 58,000 American lives, not to mention millions of Vietnamese civilians. A decade-long war founded on a lie. But here's the part that should make your stomach turn. Even after the truth was declassified, no one was held accountable. No retractions. No consequences. The media barely covered it. The official narrative remained intact. By the time the public found out, the war had already been fought. And keep in mind, this wasn't just one rogue decision. This was an entire machine working together to sell a war. By the time history is rewritten, the damage is already done. The Gulf of Tonkin wasn't just a mistake. It was proof that the system worked. Wars don't need battles. They need belief. They didn't need explosions. They didn't need radar blips. They didn't even need evidence. By 1990, all they needed was a girl and a story. For years, the United States had been waiting for an excuse to go to war with Iraq. The tension was already there. Saddam Hussein's forces had invaded Kuwait, and the world was watching. But for the American public, it still wasn't personal. The U.S. needed outrage. It needed moral justification. And this time, they wouldn't fake an attack. They'd fake a witness. October 10, 1990. A 15-year-old Kuwaiti girl sits before the United States Congressional Human Rights Caucus. She's trembling. Her voice shakes. She's struggling to hold back tears. Her name is Naira, and the story she's about to tell will change the course of history. According to Naira, she was volunteering in a hospital in Kuwait City when she witnessed a horrifying scene. She saw Iraqi soldiers storm into the hospital. She saw them rip newborn babies out of their incubators and leave them to die on the cold hospital floor. By the time she finishes, the room is in shock. Senators, journalists, and world leaders are visibly shaken. A few weeks later, President George H.W. Bush repeats Naira's story in a speech to the American public. The headlines explode. The world is outraged. And within weeks, the U.S. launches Operation Desert Storm. The Gulf War has begun. But here's the problem. Naira's entire story was a lie. She was not a hospital volunteer. She wasn't even an eyewitness. She was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States. In her story, scripted, rehearsed, and staged by a Washington PR firm called Hill and Knowlton. It's not about facts anymore. It's about what people are willing to believe. Who funded the PR campaign? The Kuwaiti government, working directly with U.S. officials to manufacture support for the war. And it worked. The fabricated story about babies being ripped from incubators was cited by U.S. lawmakers, repeated by the president and used as a key justification for military intervention. By the time the lie was exposed, tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians were dead. And here's the part that should make your stomach drop. Even after it was revealed as a lie, no one was held accountable. No retractions, no consequences, just another war sold on a manufactured atrocity. And the worst part? This wasn't even a new trick. It was just the same strategy, refined for a modern audience. They didn't need bombs, torpedoes, or stage attacks anymore. They had discovered the final tool, narrative control. Wars don't start with battles. They start with headlines. And the first rule of propaganda? If the truth doesn't give you a reason for war, you print a better version. By 1898, the United States wanted control of Cuba. The Spanish Empire was collapsing, and Cuba, one of its last remaining territories, was on the brink of rebellion. The U.S. had economic interests in Cuba, but there was a problem. The American public wasn't interested in fighting Spain. So if you're the U.S. government, how do you get the public to back a war? Simple. You give them an outrage. February 15, 1898, the USS Maine, an American battleship stationed in Havana Harbor, suddenly explodes. The ship is ripped apart. Over 260 American sailors are killed. The wreckage sinks to the ocean floor. Within hours, the press already has the answer. Remember the Maine. To hell with Spain. The headlines scream for war. There's just one problem. Nobody actually knows what happened. There's no investigation, no confirmation, just instant accusations. Spain must have done it. That's what the newspapers say. That's what the people believe. And just weeks later, the United States declares war. The Spanish-American War has begun. And just like that, the U.S. gains control over Cuba, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines. Decades later, official investigations found no conclusive evidence that Spain had anything to do with the explosion. In 1974, a U.S. Navy report suggested that the Maine was likely destroyed by an internal accident, a fire in the coal bunker that ignited ammunition. In other words, the entire war was based on a false assumption, and the press made sure the public was on board before anyone could even investigate. Same strategy, just swap in a new enemy. By the time the truth was questioned, it didn't matter. The war had already been fought. The U.S. had expanded its empire. The headlines had done their job. And that's the real lesson here. The power of war propaganda isn't that it creates war. It's that once it works, it never has to stop. The USS Maine was more than just a ship. It was the first real proof that mass media could manufacture war. And once that power was realized, it would never be given up. The most effective way to destroy an enemy is to make sure they never become one in the first place. By the 1950s, the US government had already perfected the art of manufacturing war. But war wasn't the only threat. Back home, something even more dangerous was happening. Movements were rising. Black civil rights leaders, anti-war activists, political radicals. People weren't just questioning the government, they were organizing against it. And to those in power, that wasn't democracy. That was a threat. So what do you do when the enemy isn't a foreign army, but your own people? You don't attack them. You discredit them. You divide them. You control the narrative before they can even fight back. This wasn't speculation. This wasn't a conspiracy theory. It had a name. COINTELPRO, a secret FBI operation that ran from 1956 to 1971, targeting activists, organizations, and anyone who challenged the status quo. The mission? Destroy them from the inside. Step 1, infiltration. FBI agents and informants secretly joined activist groups. They gained trust. They learned weaknesses. Then they started sowing division. Step 2, psychological warfare. Anonymous letters sent to activists designed to turn them against each other. Fake news planted in newspapers. False rumors spread to discredit leaders. Step 3, direct sabotage. Arrests on trumped-up charges. Surveillance, harassment, intimidation. Letters sent to activists threatening their families. It's not about killing the enemy. It's about making sure the enemy never becomes a threat. COINTELPRO wasn't about stopping crime. It was about shaping public perception and dismantling movements before they could grow. Martin Luther King Jr. surveilled 24/7. The FBI sent him anonymous blackmail letters urging him to commit suicide. They labeled him a communist to discredit his movement. Then the Black Panther Party, infiltrated by FBI agents posing as members. Internal conflicts deliberately orchestrated. Leaders targeted in aggressive police operations. Then anti-war protesters. Student organizations were infiltrated, monitored, and sabotaged. Leaders arrested on false charges. And here's the part nobody talks about. This wasn't just an FBI program. The same psychological warfare techniques used to manufacture consent for war were now being used to manufacture public perception. By controlling the media narrative, the government made sure that activists were seen as criminals. By infiltrating movements, they made sure that leaders never gained enough power. By sabotaging from the inside, they made sure the public never knew the real story. It's only a conspiracy theory until they declassify it. In 1971, COINTELPRO was exposed. A group of activists broke into an FBI office, stole classified documents, and leaked them to the press. The scandal was massive. Congress launched an investigation. The FBI publicly shut down COINTELPRO, or at least, that's what they said. And I'm sure no similar programs ever existed after that. Because here's the truth, COINTELPRO was never about one operation. It was about something bigger. By the time COINTELPRO ended, the government had perfected something far more powerful than surveillance. They had mastered the art of a narrative control, and that's a weapon that never gets put away. There's something unsettling about all of this. The way the same tactics repeat, the way the pattern always leads to the same place. But the most unsettling part, the realization that it never stopped. From the USS Maine to Operation Northwoods, from Gulf of Tonkin to the Naira testimony, from wars manufactured abroad to dissent silenced at home, it's easy to look at these events separately. A war here, a deception there. But when you step back, it's a pattern, a machine, a system designed to manufacture consent, control perception, and rewrite reality before the public ever knows what happened. It never stopped. It just got more sophisticated. Once upon a time, wars were started with battles. Then they were started with staged attacks. Then they were started with fabricated witnesses. Then they were started with fake intelligence reports, anonymous sources, and viral media narratives. What used to take explosives, military assets, and covert operations now just takes the right headline, the right social media trend, the right expert saying the right thing at the right time. And once that seed is planted in the public mind, it doesn't matter if the truth comes out later. Because by the time you realize what really happened, the war has already been fought. The history books have already been written. It's not about truth, it's about control. The US government has declassified thousands of documents confirming false flags, psychological operations, and deception campaigns. That's not a theory, that's history. But here's the real question. If this is what they're willing to admit, what haven't we uncovered yet? Or maybe they just found better ways to make sure we don't ask the right questions. This isn't just about the past. It's about the fact that by the time you realize history has been rewritten, it's already too late. There's something comforting about believing you know how the world works. Believing history is just a series of mistakes, misjudgments, human error. That's the lie we tell ourselves. That's the story we use to sleep at night. Because the truth? The truth is that history isn't written by accident. The truth is that wars don't just happen. The truth is that nothing was ever what it seemed. The USS Maine, the Gulf of Tonkin, the Naira testimony, COINTELPRO. We don't look back at these events and say, that was a mistake. We look back and say, that worked. Because they weren't mistakes, they were plans. And those plans didn't disappear. They evolved. There was a time when wars needed bombs. Then they only needed a faked attack. Then they only needed a story. And now? Now they don't even need that. Because once you control the narrative, once you control perception, you don't need to fake an attack. You just need to decide who the enemy is. And once the perception is set, everything else falls into place. The truth doesn't have to be hidden anymore. It doesn't have to be erased. It just has to be drowned in noise. You don't have to control facts. You just have to control what people care about. By the time the truth comes out, it doesn't even matter. Because history isn't a record of the past. It's a script. And the people writing it, they're always one chapter ahead. If everything we've covered is proven, if it's declassified, if it's undeniable, then answer this. What is happening right now that we won't know for another 50 years? What is being shaped, twisted, and rewritten as you sit here watching this video, believing you understand the world? Because that's the final trick. It doesn't matter what you believe today. What matters is what you'll believe tomorrow. And by the time you realize the lie, by the time you see the pattern, by the time history becomes clear, it's already too late. Because history isn't just something you read, it's something you're living. And the moment you understand that, you'll never see the world the same way again. Thanks for watching. I'm Ralph, and this has been Divergent Files. If you laughed, learned something, or just didn't totally hate this, hit like, subscribe, and all the buttons down there that appease the almighty algorithm masters. Because boy, they haven't been nice to our channel or channels like this. Wanna go deeper? Here's the deal. YouTube doesn't help cover any of this. No sponsors, no corporate backing, just us making this happen with your support. If you want more deep dives, wilder topics, and to help keep this channel alive, consider joining our crew for as little as $3 a month. You'll get behind-the-scenes chaos, early access, and extended episodes, stuff too wild for this main channel. Head over to patreon.com/divergentfiles. The world is strange. The stories, even crazier. And we're just here trying to make sense of it all. Thanks for showing up, sticking around, and being part of this wild experiment. Until next time, stay curious, stay kind, and remember, you are truly appreciated.